are on air for AM for Racing Radio, and tonight we have our Texas NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topic Sound Off at 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Joining me tonight will be my co-host, Sal Sagala. He'll be here shortly. In the first half hour, we are going to have some short track news for you. We'll also give some updates from the ARCA Menards East and West series, and then we'll do our truck series review from Texas Motor Speedway. At 10 o'clock, we're going to have the pre-recorded post-race media interview with the NASCAR Truck Series winner, Stuart Friesen, and his crew chief. At 9:15, we'll have our Xfinity Series review from Texas Motor Speedway. And at 9:30, we have another guest, Dylan Zampa, a pro late model driver with the SRL Southwest Touring Series, after winning at Irwindale Speedway this past weekend. And right after that, a Cup Series review from Texas Motor Speedway, which will include both the open race as well as the All-Star race. So 10 o'clock means that it's time for our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off. So join us with the Banff Racing crew as we discuss the hottest topics from the weekend of racing. And tonight we do have Jay Huseman, we'll have Andy Lasky, and we'll have Tommy Kraft on board. Joining me now is our co-host for tonight, and that is Sal Sagala. Welcome to the show, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon. Good evening.
Good evening. We'll get into some short track news, and there's some good news. One is that our guest tonight at 9:30, Dylan Zampa, won his pro late model race at Irwindale Speedway this past weekend. Were you there, Sal?
Yes, actually, I was at the race this weekend. It was a long weekend coming back from my vacation, and then only being off for 2 days and having to go straight to the track after that. But it was
exactly
fun.
And Jacob Gomes, he's on a hot streak as well. He won at Irwindale Speedway, too.
Yeah, Jacob went three, and this is third in a row. I'm going to talk to him and see if we can get him on maybe next. Hopefully we can get him on next Tuesday. And this way he can talk about his win and his streak and what's going on with Jacob Gomes and his Jacob Gomes Racing.
Yes, indeed. Now, since you mentioned Tuesday, I am going to do a programming note right now, and that is that next Monday, of course, is Memorial Day, so we will not be on the air on Monday night. We are moving our show to Tuesday night to do our Banff Racing Radio review show as well as our Hot Topic Sound Off. So make a note of that we will not be on air this coming Monday. It will be Tuesday, May the 31st, starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Okay, so that's two big wins this weekend, and that would be great if you can get Jacob Gomes on the show with us. I know he's been on before. One thing that I thought was really cool is that Ryan Blaney, who won in the Cup Series All-Star race, had South Boston Speedway on his C-post this weekend. So that was kind of cool to see that because he gave South Boston Speedway a little extra airtime there. Are you there, Sal?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm sorry, Sharon. I'm trying to get my my computer up and running. I was not feeling too well today. Sandy got really super bad sick bronchitis for the past 4 days.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm trying to fight
that.
I know she's been down, and she's supposed to be in Utah today for work, but she couldn't make the flight. And I'm fighting, trying not to get it. So I was laying down. So right now I'm getting on my computer all up and running so we can get this over with.
Okay, well, let me mention some of the folks that won this weekend on the short tracks. Kobe Rockets to an inaugural Granite State Derby win. So that was a big win. It's just Kobe. I'm sure Kobe has a last name here. I think it's Doug Kobe. Yeah, Doug Kobe. Rockets to the inaugural Granite State Derby win. So that's in the Granite State Pro Stock Series. A big win for Doug Kobe in that event. Let me see if I can get back here. Also, you had, let me come up here. Yeah, you had, we talked about Jacob Gomes. Kevin LaCroix won another epic 10-piece finish at Motorsports, Canadian Tire Motorsports road course. So that's a big win for him. Gary Klutt took the lead on the restart, but spun from contact in the final corner, and that opened the door for Kevin LaCroix to get his victory. Carson Quapel, a lot of you will remember Travis Quapel in the Cup Series. He gave a birthday gift in the Cars win at Franklin County Speedway. So, again, Connor Hall, Mike Looney, and Caden Honeycutt crashed on the front in front of the Junior Border Sports number 8, which was Carson Quapel, and that opened the door for him to get a win. Mike Looney on the not-so-good side, he has another Cars Tour disappointment. Ryan Moore slams the to a Cars Prolate win in Franklin County. Doy Run outlasts Trusek for the Granite State Derby Gold. Kyle Larson dominated the world of outlaws at Attica. I love to see the Cup Series drivers racing at these local tracks. So, okay, I don't know what happened to Sal. Sal, are you on mute?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Sharon. I was on mute.
Okay.
Some local short track racing. Yeah, there we go. Some local short track races is always good to it's always good to come out and see your supporting drivers that are up and coming, and you see a lot of action. You know, you meet a lot of drivers, you meet a lot of people there, and you know, sometimes you never know. I mean, who's going to end up at the next level? Yeah, you never know who's going to be at the next level.
Exactly. Also, the Whelen Modified Tour, they raced at Lee USA Speedway. There's some takeaways from that over at Flow Racing. Hunter Schoenberg goes elbows up for the All-Stars win at Angel Park. Robert Ballou claims his third rifle in the USAC Tony Holman Classic, so that's pretty cool. We got Bill Baylock enjoying a perfect night with All-Star Sprints at Plymouth Speedway, so that's pretty cool. C.J. Leary lands a long-awaited Terre Haute USAC Sprint win. And this weekend's Richest Dirt late model race is in Jamaica. So all of the reviews of these shows, of these races, are over at Flow Racing. They also have a track profile of New Hampshire's Lee USA Speedway, which was the location of that modified race, NASCAR Whelen modified race. So that's kind of cool, too.
A lot of
racing this weekend.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of real good racing. Yeah, there's going to be, you know, a lot more coming up, you know, even, you know, in the future, you know, weeks to come. You know, summer is usually, you know, it's going to be a good time for us, you know, when it comes to.
Yes. As we get to June, it's just going to pick up the pace, and we're going to have multiple races on multiple days at multiple different tracks. So if you want to keep up with all of the short track racing that's going on, I really suggest that you tune in to Racing America. If you're not a subscriber, you'll want to subscribe, because that will allow you to watch live streaming of several short track races that they cover. The same thing with Flow Sport Racing. They cover a lot of races over the weekend, and if you become a subscriber, you can watch all of those races to your little heart's content. So,
yeah, I would encourage I would encourage a lot of you to make sure and you know, to make sure if you can, you know, to try and subscribe to you for a month just to check it out, see what it's all about, you know, see if you like it or not. But there's a lot of different racing going on all during the week, you know, anything from dirt to modifieds to late models to super late, you know, and, you know, whatever happens to be going on for that week.
And a lot of the weekly touring series for NASCAR have their races broadcast on the live streaming services that are out there, mainly full racing for that. But there are some of those that are also covered by Racing America or MAV TV. So it really is worth the investment. There are so many races. You will never have a moment that there isn't a race available on one of those three streaming services. They just do a wonderful job of covering all of the local short track racing across the country.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, and even some of the announcers, you know, some of the commentators, you know, they're down to earth, you know, really informative, you know, to keep you informed, you know, on what's going on, you know, with each driver. You know, I mean, you know, a lot of us, we get so used to watching Cup and Xfinity and trucks, you know, that you know the drivers, you know, then you turn on these short tracks, you're wondering, well, who's this guy? Who's that guy? Well, as you start watching, you need to start following them on social media and see what they're up to. And you'll be surprised at who some of these guys are, where they're going, and you know, it's a whole different dynamic.
It really is. And you know, Brandon Paul, who used to be over at speed.com, I think that's what it was called now. Isn't that funny? They've got a new
Speed
name.
51.
Speed 51.
It was Speed 51, yeah.
Yeah, he's now doing all of the information over at Flow Racing, and taking over that role at Racing America is Matt Weaver. So I know we've had Brandon Paul on the show. We've talked about trying to get Matt Weaver to come on board and chat about what's happening at Racing America. But both of those platforms do a really remarkable job, and both of those individuals are highly, highly tuned in to what is going on in short track racing across the country.
Exactly. And actually, real quick, Brandon used to be the director. He was one of the program directors at Speed 51 before he took over at
Flow
where
Racing.
Is that now? Flow Racing,
Flow,
yeah. And Matt, yeah, Flow Racing. And then Matt's always been, you know, in tune with, you know, what's going on, you know, all around the country, you know, as far as short track NASCAR and really that's it, short track racing NASCAR.
Yes. And ARCA. But,
I didn't mention ARCA because I kind of look at ARCA as kind of like a
short track,
yeah.
And speaking of ARCA, let's go ahead and get into some updates here in the ARCA Menards series, as well as our ARCA East and West. They did not race this past weekend, but they do have some races that are coming up this coming weekend out at Charlotte Motor Speedway. The ARCA Menards series is going to be racing May 27th, starting at 6 p.m. Eastern time for the General Tire 150, and that will be broadcast on Fox Sports 1 from Charlotte Motor Speedway. So folks will be able to tune in for that live broadcast. And of course, Jay and I will do a preview of that race this coming Thursday night when we do our preview show.
Which is cool. Okay, I see.
Okay, and then after that, the ARCA East, let's go to the ARCA West because they have the next race, which will be June the 4th. That's 4:30 p.m. Pacific time, which is 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. They'll be racing the Portland 100 at Portland International Raceway. That race will be live streamed on Flow Racing So make sure you subscribe before then so that you can watch that race. There's a lot of competitors in the West, and they are all going after the best position they can get in the point standings as their season continues to wind down.
Yeah, so we got a lot of it's going to be a good race over at Sonoma with that, because they're racing with the Capital World Truck Series. This is the first year Capital World Truck Series has been back over there.
But before they get to Sonoma, they're going to be in Portland.
Yeah. For the road. Actually, they got back-to-back road course races.
Mm-hmm. So that's going to be fun for the ARCA Menards West. Then in the East, it's actually going to be three series racing at one track for three different points opportunities, including the ARCA Menards Series, the ARCA East Series, and the Sioux Chief Showdown Series. All will be awarded points for that one race, the Calypso Lemonade 150 on June the 11th, 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern, out at Iowa Speedway, and that will be televised on MAV-TV, so you'll need to have your MAV-TV subscription as well so that you can watch this one live. It's always fun when you've got combination events like that because there's a lot of action on the track with points on the line for those three different series.
Yes, and actually, if you have DirecTV, you get MAV-TV. It's free with the subscription on DirecTV.
Okay, that's pretty cool. So those are the races that are coming up. There's always some great articles up at ARCA Menards Series race page, which is arcaracing.com. They've already got the pit box up for the races at Charlotte Motor Speedway this coming weekend. They have how you can buy your tickets for that race, the General Tire 150 in Charlotte. They'll have the schedule of events that will be taking place Friday at Charlotte Motor Speedway that involve the ARCA Menards Series. And everything you need to know about America's home for racing, Charlotte Motor Speedway, located right in the heart of NASCAR country out in North Carolina there.
Well, that sounds pretty neat right there. So fans got something to look forward to that live out that way. You know, we need stuff like that out this way too, not just over back over there, but we need it out this way.
That's true. But Sal, you are our connection to the West. So we try to keep everybody informed with what's going out there on the West Coast.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we do. You know, I think we do a pretty good job, especially with the Southwest Tour Series. That's probably our biggest touring series. And even drivers from back east, you know, they talk about the series, you know, when I go back there, you know, and they always talk about, you know, what the Southwest Tour, you know, the money they pay out, you know, that it's a touring series, you know. So it gets the share of good coverage.
Okay. That's true. It's a great series, and we love hearing about everything that goes on out at the SRL Southwest Touring Series. But we also love hearing about the weekly touring series out there as well. They race at All American Speedway in Roseville, Kern County Raceway, they race at Irwindale Speedway. Those are all popular tracks that we hear about all the time from you, Sal.
Yes, and also Orange Show Speedway got started up again with a different owner. Before, we were doing Orange Show because Rod Proctor was running it. Now they have somebody else that took over. So they're getting their racing in, you know, they're getting their fix in.
Yeah.
So that's always good to hear, you know, that it just didn't.
Right.
Somebody just didn't let it go. You know, someone else took over.
Okay, let's go ahead and move on now, Sal, to our truck series review of what took place at Texas Motor Speedway on Friday. The race winner was Stuart Friesen, 38 years old, driving the number 52 Homar International Toyota with Homar Friesen Racing. His crew chief is John Leonard, and he'll be part of that broadcast that we're going to bring to you at 9 o'clock. It was the 24th annual Speedy Cash 220. This was Friesen's third victory in 124 Camping World Truck Series races, his first victory in the fourth top 10 finish this season, and his first victory in fifth top 10 finish in 10 races at Texas Motor Speedway. Christian Eckes fought hard, but ended up in second place, posting his second top 10 finish in three races at Texas and his fifth top 10 finish this year. Ryan Preece finished third, posting his first top 10 finish in his series track debut at Texas Motor Speedway. The highest finishing rookie was Corey Heim, who finished in seventh. And Stuart Friesen becomes the 26th different Camping World Truck Series winner at Texas Motor Speedway. And this is crew chief John Leonard's first Camping World Truck Series victory. So always fun when you see people getting their first win in NASCAR. I'll tell you what, it was a hard-earned, deeply appreciated victory for Stuart Friesen and Friday night SpeedyCash.com 220 Truck Series race at Texas. The first win for the Canadian driver since November of 2019 is 60 laps out front in the 52 Hallmark Friesen Racing Toyota, more than doubled his year-long total laps led, and were enough to land his first win in the last 53 races to secure his place in this year's playoff run. Now, after getting the lead from the number 98 of Christian Eckes on the final lap following an overtime restart, is how he won this race. The win is the first of the season, the first at Texas, and the third of his career. We mentioned Eckes finishing second and Ryan Preece finishing in third place. He was followed by Carson Hocevar, Ty Majeski, John Hunter Nemechek, Corey Heim, Chandler Smith, Matt Crafton, and Matt DiBenedetto to round out the top 10. The pole sitter, John Hunter Nemechek, started at the rear of the field for the start for unapproved adjustments following qualifying. He did lead 14 laps before finishing sixth. There were 18 lead changes among seven drivers and seven cautions for 36 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 116.575 miles per hour. So let me real quick just say my apologies for any background noise that you may be hearing. I'm not in my usual office tonight. I'm down here in Texas for my grandson's birthday, and I'm staying for the week through Labor, not Labor Day, but Memorial Day. So for the next couple of shows, my apologies for any unusual background noise you might hear. But Sal, what are your thoughts about this top 10?
Yeah, it's nice to see Stuart Friesen finally get the win. You know, kind of been eluding him. You know, he's put his time into the series, you know, and, you know, always a fierce competitor, you know, to finally get that, you know, that kind of monkey off his back and grab that win. You know, it's always nice to see, you know, and then, you know, when you look at the top, you know, I know you mentioned the top 10, you know, DiBenedetto 10th, but then, you know, you look at, you know, the younger drivers in the series, you know, it's Christian Eckes and Ryan Preece, you know, finishing second, mm-hmm. third. Of course, Carson Hocevar is another youngster, along with Ty Majeski, who just came into the series, you know, finishing fifth. So, you know, this is a really good. Go ahead.
We had some big names in this race as well. Ross Chastain raced in the Truck Series race this weekend. You had Todd Bodine in the race. He came home with a 13th place finish, just behind Ross Chastain in 12th place. Ben Rhodes ended up in 26th place. It wasn't his night, actually 27th place. And we had some overheating issues for Tyler Ankrum and a couple of drivers caught up in accidents. He had to feel bad for Derek Krause and Chris Wright.
Yeah, you know, that's part of racing. You know, that's something, you know, they have to kind of, you know, you have to expect, you know, but, you know, they'll regroup and come back. You know, they'll be ready for the next one.
Is this right, Sal? It says the number 17 won stage one and stage two, and the number 17, let me see if I'm reading this right.
That's Ryan Preece.
Oh, that's Ryan Preece. Okay, I did read that wrong then. I didn't think that was right. Okay, yes, Ryan Preece won those first two stages, and I was really happy to see that for him.
Oh, yeah, everybody was, you know, I'm sure, you know, it was neat to see, you know, Ryan, you know, get up there, you know, grab that, to grab those two stage ones. Too bad he couldn't grab the, you know, the third one, which is the most important one of the night.
Exactly. Two drivers didn't make it into the race this week, the number 20 of Garrett Smithley and the number 43 of Armani Williams. I think we mentioned Armani on our previous show, and it's really too bad that he wasn't able to make it into that race. But he'll have another opportunity down the road here, I'm sure.
Yeah. He'll be back to give another stab at trying to make the race. I mean, they always do. It's just they learn things, and then they come back, you know, a little bit stronger, you know, and end up getting in and, you know, sometimes winning or having a really good, solid finish.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and cover the points reports before we run out of time here. You got that up?
All right, then the points, we got John Hunter Nemechek leading the points, Ben Rhodes in second, Chandler Smith in third, Stuart Friesen in fourth, Zane Smith in fifth to round out the top five. And actually, our top five in points, minus Corey Heim, are the only ones that have are the only ones with race wins. Zane Smith leads the series with three, and he's got 19 playoff points. And then from there, then we go down to sixth is Ty Majeski, seventh is Christian Eckes, eighth is Carson Osovar, ninth is Grant Infinger, and 10th is Matt Crafton, and 11th is Tanner Gray, who's starting to make up some ground to try and catch that that 10th spot and grab that that bubble spot for the last spot into the playoffs.
Yeah, Zane Smith has the most points, playoff points, with the three wins and four stage wins. And behind him is Ben Rhodes with 10 playoff points. So those are the most significant playoff point people at this point. But this is going to be fun to watch. I think we're going to see some movement there. Zane Smith lost a couple of places. He didn't have the finish he was looking for, but with the win, Stuart Friesen gained a couple of spots. Ben Rhodes drops out of the lead for the first time in four races. He was in the lead for four consecutive weeks, four consecutive races anyway. So he lost a spot while John Hunter Nemechek gained a spot. Ty Majeski dropped a spot, as did Carson Hosovar. So Matt DiBenedetto, though, he moves up a couple of spots. He's now 13th in the series point standings. So I'd keep an eye on him over the next few weeks. He may end up in that top 10 before it's all said and done.
Oh, yeah, you definitely got to keep an eye on the bottom, on the, you know, 11th, 12th, 13th, you know, 14th and 15th. You know, they're you know, drivers, you know, that have proven, you know, that they could probably make the chase, you know, and be competitive. I didn't expect Matt Crafton to be this low in the point standings. I expected him to be a lot higher, you know, maybe up around the, you know, at least the top five.
Exactly. Okay, we're going to go ahead and move on now to our next segment. It is the top of the hour, and I want to get into Stuart Friesen's post-race audio. He won, and as we mentioned, it's kind of the first race that he's won at since 2019. So we have some post-race audio here. The entire length is 6 minutes, 17 seconds, so we'll be able to listen to the entire post-race interview from the media center with Stuart Friesen, driver of the number 52 Hallmark Friesen Racing Toyota, and his crew chief, John Leonard. So I'm going to pull that up now, and we'll take a listen.
Halmar International Toyota for Halmar Friesen Racing, winner of tonight's NASCAR Supercross Truck Series race from Texas Motor Speedway. Stuart, an overtime finish brings your first win of the season. Take us through the race, especially those closing laps.
It was hectic. I kind of wanted to race head-to-head because I thought we had a little better truck than that once earlier. And between my checkers, rarely go in my favor. Just needed to hit a clean restart, probably the best restart I've hit in my career. And we were able to race with them, and then throw things better. Big thanks to Priest, pushed the snot out of me. So I knew the odds were a little bit more in our favor when he lined up with us, so I appreciated that. And yeah, our Tierney Pro was fast. Big thanks to Hal Marcus Larson. It's been a huge building effort for the past 3 years. It's awesome.
Well, congratulations. We will now open up to questions. If you have a question for Stuart, raise your hand. We will get a wireless question. Start with Terry Jordan.
Terry Jordan, KWSR.net. Just talk about that last lap going through there, and you know, it looked like coming through 3 and 4, Eckes was going to dive bomb you, but obviously you pulled away. When you made your move, were you worried that you might come back like that?
A little bit. I knew once we got clear off of 2, it was going to be tough for him to get back underneath the side draft. So I just tried to go in the bottom of 3 and then slide back across. He did a really good job blocking the air before that. So kind of just the same thing you did right in there in the bottom 3 and slid across. You know, kept on our bumper, not, you know, next vertical.
Joey Barnes, Motorsports Review. I was kind of curious about the grip level out there. I mean, just the surface, we're trying to get it to age a little bit. I know there's some traction compound and whatnot going on. Just kind of looking at that, maybe compared to what you experienced last time.
Yeah, it moved around a lot. The traction compound really wasn't there early. The pre-sounded and got to our quarter and one and two and got by. So, being the leader, we're kind of in the wrong place there. So it started to come in, and then I thought it was going to be just dominant, like you wouldn't be able to get out of it. And then being at third stage, it's like the bottom kind of came back. Like it really got even. There was a good bottom one. Both ends. So that kind of surprised me, and it's better because of it. I thought once they gripped up, it was really big. It that bottom kind of came back to life. So it was pretty good.
Additional questions for Stuart?
L.A. Stern, Santa Maria Times. Is this the breakthrough when you and your team needed it? What does it say, you guys going ahead?
I certainly hope so. It's been trying for years, you know, building this. Chris, everybody at Halmar and Tripp. You know, moving John to crew chief last year was a really strong move for us to let Tripp focus on everything else in the business or in the organization. So it's been tough. You know, we've had some good trucks, but we really, you know, especially lately, we haven't been able to put a whole race together for whatever reason. Fast parts, but not the whole thing. You know, tonight we came up, we practiced strong, we time trialed very strong, obviously race strong. So hopefully, you know, a lot of long hours are paying off. And, it's good, you know, back when we were GMS, got a couple wins. 2019, you know, they came late in here, so it might get one during the stretch, and it's something we can build on.
We'll go back to Jerry.
Follow up real quick. Sort of along those lines. Next week you can go to Charlotte and then you've got Gateway. Just your thoughts on going into Charlotte and then moving on to Gateway, which race there.
Oh, yeah. I've raced them all many times. I like Charlotte. It's fun. There's a lot of character there. And I really like the mile and a half. So their mile and a half program is really good. And then going into Gateway, you know, we strong there. We missed a little bit there last year, but it's a fun track, a very technical track. So, everybody was asking, what's your favorite track? And which one? I like them all. This has been a blessing to race at this level, and I embrace every track. Really looking forward to Sonoma. Probably something we've improved on the most in the last few years. So,
we are also joined up front by John Leonard, crew chief of the number 52. If you have questions for either gentleman up front, please raise your hand. We'll go live.
And now NASCAR wanted me to address my passion in a little bit every day with Gander and Camping World. Big thanks to Marcus, everybody at Camping World, for coming on board with us with Chaco 9, our second truck team. And this was just my lucky fire suit. I wore my other one, and I don't know if I didn't really slim down this year like I did years past, but the other one was getting kind of tight, and this one had a lot of luck in it. So I kind of didn't remember that it had the old logo, but we'll have to get some to fix it up.
Well, John, we also know that this is your first NASCAR Camping World Truck Series victory. Congratulations. Talk a little bit about that. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. It's everybody here at HMR is kind of gets by a lot of guidance from Tripp and everybody's kind of on the same boat. Everyone put in the hours and the effort and some better guys. So. Proud of everybody, and
any additional questions for either gentleman up front? All right, well, congratulations again, and enjoy the victory.
All right, there you have it, the interview with Stuart Friesen. They didn't really have many questions for John Leonard, but your thoughts about the interview, Chad?
Yeah, it's kind of neat, to get the perspective of the drivers, after they've already, settled down, from the win, and did all the victory lane celebration, now it's time to come and talk, with the media, so you always get a different perspective, get more of an understanding instead of, when they win, somebody just shoving the microphone in their face, getting a knee-jerk reaction. So I've always liked the media room questions because they're a lot more thought out. They're not on the fly, and it gives the driver, a chance to sit down, really think, about what they're saying.
Well, and get their reactions fresh from the victory, too. Which I think is very cool because they're usually still pretty excited about getting that victory.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. When you get them when they're fresh off they shove the microphone in the face. They don't always ask the right question. Sometimes, they're professionals. I'm not taking nothing away from them. I know they're professionals, but sometimes you just don't get the right the right reaction from them. And I'm sure a lot of times there's other things they want to say besides what they said. They just need time, to sit down and think, hey, what just happened? I just won this race, they want to think, more about, what the dynamics that went into it, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, for Stuart Friesen, I really felt like Stuart Friesen was pretty happy. He talked about the long 3 years between wins and how much building that has taken place at Hallmark Friesen Racing, including bringing on that second car now with Todd Bodine, who also had a top 10 finish. Or was it a top 10 finish? It was pretty close to the top 10 if it wasn't in the top 10. So, it was not only good for Stuart Friesen, but it was good for that organization as well. And I think bringing in the second car sometimes really helps the team get better performance because you're getting a different perspective.
Yeah, it does. Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't because of the driving styles. I've talked to drivers about that, and ask them what it's like. You don't have a teammate. And sometimes, if you have two different driving styles, it really doesn't help too much. It helps. Yeah, it does help. But
well, it helped in this case.
Yeah, it helped in this case.
Yeah, it definitely helped in this case for Stuart Friesen to be able to get that win. So, and that's really where the focus is right now is on his win. And how excited was John Leonard for getting his first win as a crew chief? That was, he was pretty hyped up.
Oh, yeah. You got to be hyped up when, you know, when you finally get your, you know, your first win, you know, after being out here for so long, it was a good weekend for them, they're going to go home and enjoy the fruits of, getting a Cappy World West race victory under the belt.
Yes, indeed. And they thanked Camping World Truck Series. Camping World Truck Series and I want to say John Lemonis. I don't think that's his name. His last name is Lemonis.
Marcus.
He does so much to help these Truck Series drivers with funding when they're a little bit short to really get to that next level. He's kind of put it out there that any Camping World Truck Series drivers that needs funding, they need to talk to Marcus Lemonis because he just has been so supportive of so many teams in that series.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one week he came on and he made the challenge. He said, anybody that puts my name on their hood, you know, as they win the race, they're going to get like an extra $15,000 or $20,000. You know, so you know, of course, everybody wanted to do the free sponsorship weekend too. So, you know, not only was he sponsoring the truck, but he was also offering more money. So, I think that's really neat when a series sponsor can do something like that. You know, to keep the, you know, to keep the drivers interested and not, you know, not wanting to bail out early on the, you know, on the season. You know, or just, you know, other things come up.
Yeah, that is so true. So, as fans, we're real thankful that he does that as well because it certainly makes the racing better as well. We've talked about a lot of hot topics about bringing parity to the sport. Just made the racing so much more exciting to watch because you've got more players with skin in the game. And it really makes it. We've had a lot of close finishes this season, you know, in all three of these series, really. But once he got out in front, I think Stuart Friesen really did a nice job bringing it home for that victory.
Yeah, and I remember the days when we used to get a whole bunch of drivers where they had to. You had to race your way in. You know, wasn't, you know, okay, we have 36 cars. They're taking 40 trucks. You know, I mean, you know, you had 44, 45, 46 trucks, you know, try to make the race, you know. So it was neat to watch, you know, who's going to make it and who wasn't. But, you know, with our entry lists are just so slim now, you know, sometimes it's one or two.
Well, one or two drivers did not make it into the race in the truck series, they still put on a really good show, the drivers that were able to make it, and that's the main thing. We're going to go ahead now and move on to our Xfinity Series review of the 26th annual SRS Distribution 250 at Texas Motor Speedway. The winner, Tyler Reddick, at the age of 26, driving the number 48 Big Machine Racing Jag Metal Chevrolet. The owner, of course, is Big Machine Racing, and the crew chief was Patrick Donahue. Tyler earned his 10th victory in 93 NASCAR Xfinity Series races, and Reddick becomes the 23rd difference Xfinity Series winner at Texas Motor Speedway. This was his first victory and first top 10 finish this season, and his first victory and third top 10 finish in six races at Texas Motor Speedway. Another unusual name in the Xfinity Series this week, William Byron posted his third top 10 finish in three races at Texas Motor Speedway, and it's his first top 10 finish this season. Sam Mayer finished third, posting his first top 10 finish in two races at Texas. Austin Hill finished fifth. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. And this was Big Machine Racing's first NASCAR Xfinity Series win. It was also the first win. For crew chief Patrick Donahue, it was his third career NASCAR Xfinity Series victory. His first two were with the NASCAR Hall of Famer Jeff Gordon in 1999 and again in 2000. AJ Allmendinger, ninth, posted his 12th consecutive top 10 finish to start the season, and that puts him tied with Elliott Sadler, who also has 12 top 10 finishes to start the season, for the third most consecutive top 10 finishes to start a season. Sam Ard had 23 in 1984, and Regan Smith had 13 in 2014. So a lot of interesting stats there in the Xfinity Series. But Tyler Reddick gave Big Machine Racing their first Xfinity Series win. After running among the leaders all afternoon, Reddick took the points himself with a dramatic pass from third place with just 31 laps left. He held off the field to take the checkered flag on Saturday afternoon's SRS Distribution 250 at Texas Motor Speedway, making just his second start for Big Machine Racing. In the number 48, Tyler Reddick won the Xfinity Series race at Texas. The win is the 10th of Reddick's career, while it's the first time for Big Machine Racing. William Byron made his first start of the year for Junior Motorsports. He finished second, followed by Sam Mayer with another top five in third. It was Justin Allgaier, then it was Austin Hill to round out the top five. Ryan Truex recorded his best finish of the year for Joe Gibbs Racing as Josh Berry, Riley Herbst, A.J. Allmendinger, Lannon Castle round out the top 10. The pole sitter, Noah Gregson, won the opening stage, but he was involved in two incidents during the final stage. Josh Berry earned his third stage win of the season, taking the second stage victory. There were eight lead changes among seven drivers, 11 cautions for 62 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 101.497 miles per hour. Your thoughts there about the race results for the top 10? Sal?
Yeah, it was neat to see how excited Tyler Reddick was when he got out of the car, you know, after the win, you know, and he was, you know, I know NASCAR kind of made a comment too, you know, it's kind of like when Cole Custer won at Auto Club with, I can't remember the name of the team. It was a brand new team that came out this season. You know, Cole Custer was able to take the car into the victory lane, and Tyler Reddick the same thing. You know, he said that RCR's been
racing. They're not really a new team, but it's the first time I think he's raced with them.
Yeah, and he said that, you know, it was neat, you know, to get with them, you know, because he said RCR is a little bit, you know, struggling, you know, with their program, you know, and it was neat, you know, to get in the car, you know, to get that win. Not only that, but just to get all the data that they need, you know, to push forward.
Exactly right. Now there were several drivers that did run into some issues. Brett Moffitt had a track bar issue. There were a couple drivers involved in accidents. Actually, it's more than a couple. It's quite a few. Ryan Barber's had an engine issue, but the drivers involved in accidents include Ryan Ellis, J.J. Yaley, Anthony Alfredo, Alex LeBay, Jesse Awuji, Ryan Sieg, Lord Gregson, we mentioned his incident, and Matt Mills, all involved in incidents on the track, taking them out of the race early. The margin of victory was 1.825 seconds between the first two drivers there, Tyler Reddick and William Byron.
Yeah, it was a good race, like I said, for Tyler Reddick. He's a back-to-back NASCAR Xfinity champion. So, you know, give him the nod the way they gave him the nod to get in the car, you know, was just excitement in itself, you know, and just, you know, to see, you know, the way he handled it, took advantage of the situation, you know, and hats off to Tyler and congratulations to him and the team on the win. It's neat to see one of the, you know, not one of the big teams, you know, grab those wins.
Yes, that is always exciting to see. And you know what? This is a confidence booster, I think, too, for drivers like Tyler Reddick. He's come so close to getting a win in the Cup Series that a lot of times you'll see a driver come down to the Xfinity or the Truck Series, get a win, and it really helps them come back to the Cup Series and get better finishes and maybe even that win that they're looking for.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, it does. You know, and even that one saved by Josh Berry, you know, to start off the last stage, you know, it was amazing, you know, how he was able to pull that save off, you know, not get hit, you know, not get wrecked, you know, still, you know, be competitive, you know, at the end for the win.
Well, that is so true. Do you want to go ahead and cover the points report?
Yeah, and as far as points, we got A.J. Allmendinger leading the points. Noah Gregson in second. Ty Gibbs in third. Justin Allgaier in fourth. Josh Berry in fifth. And Brandon Jones round out the top six. And for those top six, we have, looks like Ty Gibbs still has the most wins in the series with three and the most playoff points at 17, with Noah Gregson right behind him with 16 playoff points. And then from there, then we go to Sam Mayer in seventh, Riley Herbst in eighth, Austin Hill in ninth, Landy Castle 10th, Ryan Sieg in 11th, Daniel Hemric in 12th, and Anthony Alfredo is right there on the bubble in the 13th spot.
Okay,
are you here, Sharon?
I apologize. Yeah, I'm here. I had to take care of my dog.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool to see what's going on here in the Xfinity Series. A.J. Allmendinger has been having a good run, but you've got a couple of drivers that have two and three wins with Noah Gregson and Ty Gibbs. So you know when the playoffs begin, those drivers move to the top right away, especially with those extra playoff points that they're getting.
Oh, yeah, it's just up to A.J., you know, to try and, you know, capitalize and try and get some stage wins. You know, but, you know, I mean, what he's doing, you know, I guess, I mean, just to get in, you know, is, you know, that's all a lot of these drivers want. They just want to get in, you know, and then, you know, let it play out from there. But we've seen in the past how important those stage points are.
Sorry, I had to put myself on mute there again. Yeah, that is so true. Some of the drivers that are in that playoff bubble, they've got a little ways to go. But these guys, there's still some racing to go in this Xfinity Series. So a lot of them will make up some of those points. But it's really tough. The competition is very tough this year in the Xfinity Series. Anthony Alfredo's below the bubble, 40 points out, I believe. From being able to be in that top 12. Jeb Burton in 14th. He's 23 points behind Alfredo. And then Sheldon Creed, 16 points behind Jeff Burton. These guys have a ways to go, but it's not impossible. If they get that win, it pops them right up into that top 12 when the playoffs begin. As long as they're in the top 20, they've got a chance.
Oh, yeah, just like Boston Hill sitting ninth in points, but he has that one win, so Austin's already got himself locked in. You know, so I mean, the rest of the season, you know, it depends how he wants to play it. You know, he could play it, you know, either safe or use it as a time, you know, to get more acclimated to the car. So when the playoffs do start, you know, he's ready to rock and roll.
Exactly right. And they all know it, and they're trying to do everything they can to put themselves in position. Now, the next races are coming up at Charlotte Motor Speedway. That's a 1.5-mile track, and a lot of these drivers do pretty well on the 1.5-mile tracks. So a lot can happen that can change up these point standings in a short amount of time.
Oh yeah, that's one thing for sure. We see it, and we've seen it happen in the past too.
Yeah, we definitely have, and that's where a lot of times one point can make a huge difference. I always think about Tony Stewart and Carl Edwards. Tony Stewart had those 5 wins in 10 races, and even though they were tied in series points, Tony Stewart got the victory or got the championship because of the 5 wins that he had. So you never know when somebody's going to go on a streak of... Yeah, you never know when somebody's going to go on a streak of wins. I'm sorry. Okay, Sal, are you ready to move on to introducing your guest?
Yeah.
Okay. And Sal, I'm going to let you do the entire interview, and that way I'm going to take care of my dog while you're doing that.
Okay. Okay.
Thanks. He's not, let me see, is here. So I'm going to bring him into the queue right now.
Okay.
So you can go ahead and introduce him.
Okay. Our guest for tonight is Dylan Zampa. We had him on a couple weeks ago, talked about his involvement with the Kawicki Development driver program and, you know, what he's doing, you know, as far as racing and taking care of stuff like that. So we have Dylan back on this week. He won the race Saturday night at Urrindale in the Pro-Late division. It was a really good race. We'll talk about it later on during the show, but, gosh, it was really, really good played-out race for the small field of pro leagues we have. A lot of good close racing, and unfortunately only one can cross that line, and happen to be Dylan Zampa. So with that, we want to welcome Dylan to the show. Welcome to the show, Dylan.
Thanks for having me.
So it was a night that, I guess, gosh, what can you say from the start of it, the race, you know, you know, from your starting position, you know, to move up, you know, through the field and get that one top spot. But it wasn't so much the top spot. It was the fact, you know, that you got the race win. And I know for you it was a big race win because of the points that you need for the Kawicki developmental program.
Yeah, so our mindset going into that race was just to get the car in the trailer in one piece, run our race, let the race come to us, and... Man, we had a rocket ship of a car all day. We unloaded really good on Friday. I don't think we touched it one bit all weekend. Unloaded perfect. So going into qualifying, I knew that we had a really fast car. I wanted to save the tires as much as I could, so I pushed it like 85% in qualifying, and we ended up P2, which I was happy with, and pulled a 3, which felt really good. I know I didn't have to work too hard. But they made me work for it. I fell back to fourth at one point, and we worked our way all the way up to second behind my brother, and we just started chasing them down. And luckily, we got a late race caution, with five to go, and I just had a really good spotter up top. It was Jeremy Doss. Late race needed him for a spot, so I went over and asked him, and he agreed to help me. So just big props to Jeremy Doss for spotting for me that race. And, yeah, so it came down to the last two laps where I had to pass my brother for the win, and that's always a little stressful knowing that it's your brother. So I just tried to race him as clean as I could, and it worked out perfect. We got to his inside, and he tried to get back by me, but we had such a really good car that I was able to fend him off.
You know, and actually this race, this time out at Ordeaux, it wasn't on the half mile, so I'm sure there was a lot more different race strategy, you know, that went into, you know, to plan out this weekend since we're on the little smaller third mile. And then that third mile in turns three and four, you got that nasty bump out there that I know a lot of drivers, you know, they've talked to the track about. I know Tim is trying to fix it. I don't know what he's going to do, maybe do some on the off season and maybe dig it out and try and, you know, flatten it out a little bit more. But when you see the cars go through there, you can see you guys bumping and, you know, through that one spot.
Yeah, to me personally, or I've asked my brother about it, the bump actually makes good racing because it'll set your car up really good if you hit it just right. If you hit it just perfect every single lap, it'll bump your car and it'll pitch it sideways and you can drive off. It's got good drive off. It makes the car turn even better. But there is, before that bump, like a car length, half a car length before that, there's a new bump that actually can end your night if you hit it. And that changed the line for everyone. So you had to enter a little bit higher and then come down into the bump off of four. So that definitely changed the strategy a little bit. But later into the race, I hit it one time, and actually it helped me. So I started hitting the both bumps, and we picked up like a tenth and a half every single lap on my brother when he was leading the race. So I don't have a problem with the bumps. Other drivers might, but I don't see a problem with it. But the third mile, it's just so hard on tires. Like on like lap five, you're already sideways. So it's just all about throttle control. A lot of people will just try to floor it, and it doesn't work at that track. So I had a good spotter up top to coach me. He's one of the best at that third mile. Every time we went there, I'm pretty sure he won all three races last year. So I definitely had a good spotter, driver, coach up in the top teaching me the ways around that track, and I definitely think that helped me.
So as far as the development program, how big was this win, you know, for the points and, you know, to help, you know, hopefully, you know, lock it in this season?
Yeah, so we've had quite a few wins this year so far, and going into that race, we knew we had a good car. So we were just going to try to come out with a decent finish, and to win definitely is a big points boost in the Kawicki points. But definitely the fundraiser we did in the stands that race definitely outdoes the points for the racing. So I hope that race gave us a lot of points, and we're just looking for we're just looking forward to the next race, which is going to be in 2 weeks at Roseville again. It's going to be another twin 35 lap race, and I'm looking forward to getting back to that one. We got Logan's car in the garage already, and we're already working on setting it up for Kern for the next SRL race. So his car is already finished and out of the shop, so we can get my car in, set it up for Roseville, race Roseville, and then come back to the shop, set my car up, and get it ready for the Kern race.
So so tell us a little bit about the fundraiser you had. I know it was a 50-50 raffle, and I know you've been doing this at all the tracks. You know, it gives the fans, you know, a chance to kind of interact with you, plus it gives them a chance to put, you know, a little bit of cash in their pockets.
Yeah, so the only funny thing is that last race, well, all the races, it's just super hard to get to the stands. And it definitely sucks a little bit that I'm not the one that gets the pull. But my grandma does a great job. She's the one that sits out front and sells all the tickets. And she's able – the fundraiser does stop right when my race starts so she can go up and watch it. So I appreciate my grandma and her new boyfriend. They just got engaged. I mentioned that when I won. So I'm super happy for them. Their wedding's actually coming up really soon. So I'm looking forward to going to that. And the 50-50 raffle was to go to the Shepherd's Pantry, which is about 5 miles from the track. So it's always good that the track's right around the corner. I know that Tim can just take all the money and drive right over there the day after the race. So it's always good to know that we can do something in the community wherever we race. That's just really my goal this year, is just that wherever we race, that's just where I want to help. And I also do a lot of community service in my town also at the food bank. So I do a lot of community service this year. I definitely am doing a lot more than I did last year. So I'm definitely proud of myself, my team, just everyone that's helping me get to this point where we can do all these fundraisers. So I just couldn't do without all of them.
That's really neat, because, for people that, at the end, we'll give you a chance to give a shout out to where you're social medias for people who follow this, but it's really neat, to see, doing stuff like this, track to track, and all your stops you make. But then there was also another race that was involved this weekend, and it was the getting the chance to run the super late in the actual Spear Southwest Tour for SPS Racing.
Yeah, so I just couldn't be just happier with how we ended up finishing. We ended up coming out P6 when the race ended, but unfortunately the 08 car got DQ'd for left side weight. So super bum for him, he's been really close to getting wins, and for him to get DQ'd, it definitely sucks. I don't want to see a racer get DQ'd like that. But we ended up coming out P5 later in the day. So I'm super happy with how the Sigma Performance team did. They gave me a really good car. We unloaded, only got 8 laps on Friday, which was a bummer. And then we only had 1 hour and 30 minutes on Saturday, and I only ran 25 laps. So I definitely didn't have a lot of experience like every other person that was running out there. So I just knew in my mindset that I just wanted to go out there and learn as much as I could, and just bring the car home in one piece. I didn't want to make the Sigma guys do a lot of work. But definitely, once I got past the first, I think we fell back to 15th at one point, made a pass, and I knew that the car was really good. So I just told my spotter, I told Joe on the radio, I was like, I'm going to go for it. I'm going to see how far we can get. They all agreed, and we worked our way all the way up to 6th. We made a pass with 10 to go and got to 6th. So I'm super happy. Definitely, I learned a lot that race. I definitely think it's going to translate over into my pro late as well. The racing atmosphere is just completely different, a lot crazier, and a lot of strategies go on into the super compared to the pro late. So I'm definitely going to take all that I learned, put into the pro late, and hope we can excel even more in our pro late division.
So climbing into the pro late, kind of explained a little bit, but what was it like to get up there, race against, some of the other drivers, the ones that you're used to racing, week in and week out in the pro lates, and also to get on a big half mile instead of Joe giving your first start, let's say like All American Speedway or Stockton.
Yeah. So the competition was just stout that race. They had 22 cars, just a stout field. Definitely when I got into the race, I ran my practice line, and it wasn't really working out very well. And I was definitely observing a lot around me. My spotter was telling me where people were running. And I just started searching around the racetrack, and I found a couple lines that worked the best for the car. So that's when we started moving forward. We found the proper lines. And I just couldn't be happier with how the Sigma Performance team did, set my car up. It was a perfect car. They worked with Preston Peltier. He won the All-Star Showdowns there in 2021, sorry. So they had really good notes on what setup to run, because the setup they ran there won the All-Star Showdown. So, running up there with Buddy Shepherd, he's a veteran in the Supers, so he knows what he's doing. I got behind him. I saw what he was doing. Cale Kinky, he's a local at Irwindale. I saw what he was doing. Definitely seeing what other people were doing was helping me improve my driving skill in a super to get around them.
Well, I'll tell you, in the whole weekend, it was exciting, you know, to watch you race, you know, especially, you know, the prolates, you know, the battle that you and your brother had, you know, in the closing laps, you know, to, you know, get next to him, you know, and, you know, see how clean you guys race each other. You know, nobody really got into, you know, it reminded me of a few races ago, you and Seth Wise, you know, battling for the win. It was, you know, kind of the same thing, you know, on a, the only difference was Kern was a half mile track and over here at Erndale was a third mile track, but still it was a good battle between the, you know, between you guys you know, showed a lot of talent, a lot of poise and a lot of patience, you know, not to take the other driver out, you know, just for the sake of the win.
Yeah, so personally, that's what I think a race should look like, you know, nice, clean, nice and clean, no door rubs. I mean, I don't think that's necessary. Like the Kern race, we were on a half mile, super sketchy at those speeds. And I think that's what racing should look like. You set up your competitor. You don't need to run into them to get by them. So I love racing against my brother. I know he's a clean driver. We both have the same driver style passing wise. So I know that when I get behind him or he gets behind me, I know both of us are going to pass each other clean. And I'm really looking forward to getting back in the car in 2 weeks. We have a week off, which is actually a sigh of relief for all of us, our crew, our family. We're just looking for a break, but really there's no break. We're just not racing this upcoming weekend, but we'll still be working in the shop every day. So I'm just looking forward to getting back out there in 2 weeks.
And then you also, do you have a graduation coming up this week, don't you?
No, not this week. I'll be graduating within 3 weeks, but I'm looking forward to that also. I'm looking forward to getting my college life started. I'll be going to my local college here in Napa, my JC. They have a phenomenal welding program. I'll be in that, so I'll still be at home, cranking the wrenches at home, still working. My brother will be going off to college, so he won't be racing probably halfway through the rest of the year. I think he's got two more races before he goes off to college, so that's going to be a bummer. Not seeing him at the racetrack, but I'm looking forward to getting the rest of the season going. We're on a good hot streak right now. We've got five wins in a row so far at Roseville. We came off of two victories the weekend before this past Irwindale race, and I'm just looking forward to keeping the momentum going. The team's doing a phenomenal job in the pits. My dad's doing a great job in the shop, keeping the car well maintenance. We're doing everything right now, and I'm just looking forward to keeping it going.
Well, that's neat. You know, I that's one thing. You know, a lot of times when we talk about short track racing, you know, is a lot of the cars, you know, they're not built in a big shop. Like what a lot of fans are used to seeing. You know, with the bigger series, you know, a lot of these cars are built in your own garage. You know, utilizing your garage and your driveway, whatever you can. You know, just to get the car ready, you know, for the next race, you know, and, you know, your neighbors come out and see, you know, and I'm sure they come out and, you know, talk a little bit, you know, then when you start it up, they probably get mad because of all the noise, you know, but I mean, you know, when they see, you know, the young drivers, it's not just, you know, older guys just trying to, you know, upset them, you know, I'm sure they're more willing to accept it.
Yeah, our neighbors, luckily we live in a cul-de-sac, so all of our neighbors know what we do. They follow my mom on social media. They follow me, my dad, my brother. So they know what we do, so they know that we're going to be loud some nights. But usually the 602 cars, they don't put out a lot of power, so they're not super loud, so that makes it a lot easier for us at least. But, we just have a little tiny two-car garage. Car sits on one side, so when we have to jack it up on the right side, the jack handle's hitting the wall. So definitely it's tough, but if one car gets banged up and it needs to get fixed, we'll pull the one that's already fixed, that doesn't have any damage. We'll put that one in the garage to get set up, and the other one will be out in the front yard, and we'll be fixing anything that needs to be fixed, either it being fiberglass repair, vinyl repair, just all that little stuff that needs to get fixed.
That's neat. Now, with that, Dylan, I just want to say congratulations again on your win. Good luck, you know, in the upcoming races. And if there's any any place where our listeners can follow you at, you know, if you want to go ahead and, you know, mention your social media, where they can find you at.
Yeah, so you can find me on Facebook at Dylan Zampa. You can find me on Instagram at Dylan_Zampa, or you can find me on Twitter at Zampa_Dylan.
That's neat. And you know what? We just want to say thanks again for coming on the show, and hopefully, you know, we can get you back on again. And once again, congratulations on the win, and, you know, especially, you know, good luck, you know, going forward with the Kuwaiki Developmental Program.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay. All right. Good night. You there, Sharon?
Yep, I'm here. That was a great interview, and I appreciate you kind of taking the reins there to allow me some time to kind of take care of my dog. I will say that, you know, it's really cool to see him having such a great year along with Jacob Gomes. And I can't wait for him to come back again at some point down the road here.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll get him back on, and you know, it was a good interview with Dylan. You know, a lot of things going on, you know, for being a young driver, you know, a lot going on in his life. You know, he's, like you said, you know, he's going to be graduating here in, you know, a few weeks, and, you know, going to college, you know, learn welding, which is going to help him, you know, as far as, you know, work on the race cars. Not only that, but then it's a trade, you know, that, you know, you can, if racing doesn't work out, you know, you always have something to fall back on, which is always good to hear, you know, the younger drivers, you know, hear them, you know, if they're looking out for more, you know, yeah, they all want to race, but, you know, they're looking out for their, you know, for their future and stuff.
Okay. Well, we've got to move on, Sal. We've got two more races we have to review here with the Open and the All-Star race, the two biggest races of the weekend. So I don't want to cut it too short here. The race winner of the Open was actually Daniel Flores at the age of 30, driving the number 99 for Freeway Insurance Chevrolet for Trackhouse Racing. His crew chief this week was Travis Mack. He won the All-Star Open, his second victory in the special non-point NASCAR Cup Series event. He also won in 2017. Ricky Stenhouse Jr. won stage one in the Open that allowed him to transfer to the All-Star race, as did Chris Buescher, who won stage two and moved on to the All-Star race. And Eric Jones won the NASCAR fan vote that gave him the ticket into the All-Star race at Texas Motor Speedway. I want to stick to the Open here. It was Kyle Busch who won the pole for the All-Star race, but it was Tyler Reddick who won the pole for the All-Star Open with a speed of 186.981 miles per hour. That was cool to see. I don't really have any other information here. Okay, he won the final stage. Daniel Flores won the final stage of the NASCAR Open. There were four lead changes among four drivers, four cautions for eight yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 82.518 miles per hour. The actual results, the top five were Daniel Flores, Austin Dillon, Justin Haley, Cornel LaJoie, and Eric Jones. The next five drivers were Ty Dillon, Cole Custer, Todd Gilliland, Cody Ware, and Garrett Smithley. Any thoughts there? The margin of victory was 1.393 seconds. Your thoughts about the top 10 there?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I kind of missed that race, so I didn't really see it. But, you know, to see, you know, like you mentioned, you know, Daniel Suarez, you know, get the win. And then, you know, it's neat to see once again, you know, these, you know, not one of the bigger teams, you know, whether it's a short race, it doesn't matter. It's still a NASCAR Cup race. The competition is still the same across the board. It's just a fewer laps. But, you know, to see him, you know, get the win in it, you know, it's huge for, you know, for not only him, but for the team, you know. I mean, gosh.
Exactly. So, yeah, it was really good to see those guys be able to advance, Daniel Suarez, to win that All-Star Open and to be able to race into the All-Star race itself. Okay, now I want to get into the All-Star race. The winner there was Ryan Blaney at the age of 28, driving the number 12 Menards Wrangler Ford for Team Penske and his crew chief, Jonathan Hassler. He won the $1 million in that All-Star race. It was his first victory in that event. It's an on-point event. He's the 26th different driver to win the NASCAR All-Star race. This is the fourth victory in the All-Star race for Team Penske. Joey Logano also won it in 2016, Kurt Busch in 2010, and Ryan Newman in 2002. Denny Hamlin finishing runner-up in the All-Star race for his first second-place finish in that event. Austin Cindric finishing third at Texas for his first top five finish and first appearance in the All-Star race. It's also the 13th victory for Ford in the NASCAR All-Star race. And Kyle Busch won stage one, Austin Cindric won stage two, and Ryan Blaney won stage three in the NASCAR All-Star race. Ryan Blaney, Ryan Blaney won his first career All-Star race Sunday night at Texas Motor Speedway to earn that $1 million payday in the annual fan favorite non-points rate paying event. He and his team celebrated twice because Blaney's number 12 Team Penske Ford ultimately beat Denny Hamlin in the number 11 for Joe Gibbs by 0.266 seconds of a second in an overtime finish. But at one point, Blaney thought he may have taken the checkered flag. When the caution flag flew the first time, he was approaching the finish line in regulation only seconds before he crossed the line. So under the normal rules, the race would have been over, but there are special rules for the All-Star race, so it wasn't over. Blaney won that race, but we'll talk more about that during our Hot Topic segment. There were quite a few drivers there wanted to be in that top 10. We mentioned the top three. Joey Logano came in fourth. Daniel Suarez, who raced his way into the event, finished in fifth place, followed by Alex Bowman, A.J. Allmendinger, Chris Buescher, who also raced his way in, finished eighth. Then it was Brad Keselowski and Christopher Bell rounding out the top 10 there. Your thoughts about the All-Star race?
Yeah, I it was a good race. I really liked it. You know what, Ryan Blaney, came out on top. You know, like you said, you know, there's an incident, you know, that you know, Denny Hamlin cried about, but you know what, in the end, you know, whether NASCAR made the right call or not, you know, that doesn't matter. The thing is that Ryan Blaney has $1 million richer today, you know, and it was a good, hotly contested race. Austin Cindric was looking good there for a while, too. It's good to see him, you know, get a top three out of it, you know, podium finish, being actually the highest finishing rookie of the event. So, you feel bad for Kyle Busch after he dominates it, and then, you know, was it Ross Chastain's fault, you know, what happened, you know, he ran over Kyle, you know, and ended his day. In the end, the youth prevailed.
Yes, indeed. There were several drivers who did have accidents. Eric Jones, who won the fan vote, had an accident in the news day on lap 103. Kyle Busch, involved in an accident, along with Ross Chastain and Chase Elliott. They all ended their day on lap 47. And Kyle Larson had an accident that stopped his day at lap 36. So those were the drivers that run into problems during the All-Star race. A lot of people had those drivers picked for the win.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they did. You know, but you got to remember, this is a you know, it's not like any other race that we run during the season. So, I mean, it's wide open as to, you know, who can win it, you know, and, you know, so, I mean, you know, it's all up in the air.
Yes, indeed. I totally get it. But these drivers put on a good show, and it was fun to watch. 2 hours, 2 minutes, and 47 seconds. For the All-Star race at Texas Motor Speedway. Now, I do have a little bit of race audio here. Let me see how long it is. From Scott Miller, the length is 6 minutes. Yeah, we're not going to be able to listen to all of it. So I was hoping I'd have time to play that because a lot of people had questions about what took place, you know, why a caution was called. I know he said this. They take full ownership of the fact that they probably called one of those cautions a little prematurely and that, you know, they did take some safety precautions with the window net, gave some extra laps for Ryan Blaney to get that window net secured when they thought that he probably did have it secure. They went on with the race. I know Denny Hamlin had some issues with that. But it seems like Denny Hamlin has issues after every race anymore.
I was just going to say the same thing. Denny Hamlin is nothing. He's an issue himself. I mean, he is. I just, there's always something. And whenever something's going on, you know that the H driver is behind it, you know, and it's not Hendrick Motorsports, you know, it's Denny Hamlin, you know, he's a whiner, and, you know, and, man, he's used to not worry about what NASCAR does, what happens, to worry about his own race. And he might have been able to do something, you know, to win it, but I know he was just so focused on that window net.
I wonder if he would have felt the same way about it had it been him that thought the race was over and did the same exact thing that Ryan Blaney did.
Well, he would have done the same thing. Except he'd have cried and complained, oh, well, I was already over the line. You know, you can't go back and, you know, take a win away. It would have been all over.
Yeah. But anyway, it was a lot of fun doing the show with you here tonight, Sal. I know it's going to be a hot topic in our 10 o'clock segment. As I mentioned earlier, we've got Jace Huseman coming on board along with Andy Lassie and Tommy Kraft to hit all the hot topics from this weekend of racing. So looking forward to that. Your appearance at Irwindale Speedway this weekend is very much appreciated in bringing the guest Dylan Zampa on board. And again, you know, just having that firsthand knowledge of what took place in the SRL races, not only with Dylan, but with Jacob Holmes as well.
Yeah, it was, it was neat, you know, to see Jacob, you know, go up there, you know, and help, you know, help him out the way he did. You know, I'm sure, like you say, you know, Jacob's won a lot on that third mile, you know, so it was, you know, that was probably, you know, what could have catapulted him, you know, into the spot where he finished.
Okay. That sounds good. And Sal, always enjoy doing the show with you. Next Tuesday, once again, I just want to remind everybody, we are not doing a Monday night show next week. It will be on Tuesday, May the 31st at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Sal and I will be right back here on Danza Racing Radio. So once again, Sal, thanks for being here, and we'll look forward to talking to you next Tuesday.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Everyone have a good night, and we'll talk to you. Have a safe weekend, too. And we'll see everybody.
Enjoy the Memorial Day.
Yeah, enjoy your Memorial Day weekend.
Okay. Okay. Thanks,
Scott. Good night.
Good night.
All right. Good night.
All right. Folks are coming on board here for our Hot Topic Sound Off. We've got our first person here. And I'm not sure I recognize the numbers, so you'll have to identify yourself. Whoops. Yeah, that was Sal that dropped off. So you're in the queue. Who's here?
Oh, it's me. It's Thomas. Hey, how are you? How are y'all doing tonight?
Real good, Tommy. We're looking forward to talking to you about Hot Topic Sound Off here tonight. We're expecting Jay Huseman to also come on board here, along with Andy Lasky. And there's Jay. We'll bring him into the queue. Okay, Jay, you're online.
All right. Sorry about that. A little bit late here. I was discussing things with Mike. I know Mike's not going to be able to be here tonight. Have some opinions of his that I'll share as well and why I disagree with him. But now Mike and I having a little bit of a sidebar there.
Okay. Okay. So I know we hit on one of those topics at the end of our review segment and how kind of gave some of his thoughts as well. Let's start with the Denny Hamlin comments after the race, the All-Star race, and the Ryan Blaney victory. I do have, while we're waiting for Andy to show up, I want to kind of start this off with some audio that I have post-race from Scott Miller. He is the Senior Vice President of Competition at NASCAR. And it's about 6 minutes long. Let's hear what he had to say.
Sure. Yeah, so obviously I think, you know, everybody, you know, knows that we probably prematurely called that yellow flag. You know, the way that works in the tower is that we're all watching around the racetrack, and we make the, you know, obviously the race director who has the button and makes the call is the final say of when the yellow gets put out. We all watch, and we saw the car and mentioned the car against the wall, riding the wall down the back straightaway. And the race director looked up, and I'm not sure what he saw, but he immediately put it out. So, wish we wouldn't have done that, but we did that, and we'll own that we probably prematurely put that caution out.
Denny Hamlin was pretty frustrated. He said it was a safety situation. NASCAR always talks about that. What were the decisions made by NASCAR there?
So, you know, again, I think obviously Ryan Blaney thought he won the race. Another byproduct of kind of special rules of the All-Star, because every other race that we do besides this one, he would have won the race when the caution flag came out. So they were celebrating. He put the window net down. We saw him struggling to get it back up, but coming through, he was warming his tires back on the back straightaway. You can clearly see both hands on the wheel warming the tires up. The window net was up. No way for us to know if he got it 100% latched or not. And at that point in time, no way we can be certain that he didn't get it latched. So there's no way we can call it down there road at that time. Well, that would have really have kind of gone out of character and been out of anything else that we have ever really done. So there was some speculation about doing that up there, but I think, you know, like I said, we saw it, and no way we could have known that it was latched properly or not, but that's where we are now. If it was hanging down on the door, we would have, if he couldn't get it to where it was up, and we had some doubt that it was, you know, latched, then we would have had to do something with it, because we wouldn't have
fix it, and because it is a special situation race, give it back where it was at? Did you think about it?
That's what Bob asked just a second ago. Yeah, we speculated about doing that, but that would have been pretty out of character to bring someone down pit road and then put them back in the spot that they came out of.
Bring it up, he said, it's going to get a lot of attention during the week.
Sure.
He said, NASCAR is gladly going to let you debate the wisdom of that, so as you don't reflect on how ridiculous that yellow flag situation was, as Blady was crossing the finish line to win.
No, we're not, we don't deflect from anything. We're pretty much on what we do, so I would have to dispute the Dale Jr. quote.
In a special situation,
So one of the things that we get, so here's a little bit of insight for y'all. So we do the same, I think I've been at NASCAR for 7 years, and we've operated under the same rules for races, little tweaks here and there, but pretty much the way that we operate the tower, the things that happen on the track, it's we do the same thing over and over and over again. And every Tuesday, almost without fail, a situation crops up that we need to talk about, that we learn from. And doing the same thing over and over again, and we still learn, and still learn how to do things better. And then when we institute all these special rules that we always get asked to do, we're kind of setting ourselves up and the competitors up for problems like what we saw tonight. And I wish we could operate all-star races a little bit more under kind of our normal guidelines.
When you make unique rules, you ever sit down and think, well, maybe as you make them, we should be careful, because as you re-look at this, you go back, look at another crazy race, and you're like, well, maybe that'll be hard to
finish. Well, we looked at, we made revisions the rules as early as this morning, because you always have to look at all these different situations that can crop up. Here's a for instance. So we put those performance parameters in for those automatic spots from the stages, and then we're thinking about, all right, we're always thinking about, okay, what can crop up and what can crop up on us? What awkward situation could we get in? And we're like, well, what if we have a big wreck and they still finish 15th, but they're not on the lead lap? It's like, can't start a car that's not on the lead lap, even though it's made that right there. So this morning we changed the rules. It's like, it's that kind of stuff. And did we cover every single thing that it could have cropped up? Maybe, maybe not. That's the struggle with these special events, is they're different and they're out of character. All of us are doing things that we don't typically do.
Thank you guys very much.
Thank you. Okay, there you have it. That was Scott Miller, the Director of Competition at NASCAR, and his thoughts after the incident on at the All-Star race, and Denny Hamlin's comments. So first of all, Andy has now joined us. So welcome to the show, Andy.
Thank you, Sharon. How are you doing tonight?
Doing really well. We're going to start with Jay, though, and his comments after listening to the post-race audio from Scott Miller. And we brought up the topic of Denny Hamlin's comments after the race. So, Jay, you can get us started.
Okay, Sharon, I want to clarify something here. What the topic is, because there's several from Scott Miller's audio that it could fall under. You're just saying Denny Hamlin's comments itself?
Let's go with Denny Hamlin's comments and
okay,
as it relates to Scott Miller's comments.
Okay. I didn't get to actually watch the race. I listened to some of it on the radio. I see all the social media stuff. And I talked to my mom this afternoon, and she had watched it, and she said that as far as you could tell, Blaney had gotten it hooked up, which is what Scott Miller had said. Now, was it 100% secure the way it's supposed to be? I personally highly doubt it. I know drivers have said that from the inside, while you're strapped in the car, you really can't. But as Scott Miller said, with the video footage they had, it was up. He was not holding it up while he was driving. We've seen that in the past. And that's what my mom pointed out, was that it was up on its own. So I think they made the right call, unless they were going to make the exception. I know it got brought up. Bring him to pit road, double check it, and then give him his spot back. They didn't have the evidence to say it is not secure. I know Joey Logano jumped in there. First off, Blaney, Logano, I think both said, hey, if I were in second and I could find a way to get the guy in front out of the race and win $1 million, I'm going to say whatever, it's raining, whatever. Okay.
Exactly.
So they all acknowledge that. They understand that. Denny, I think, how do I say this? Get through the crying and whining of not winning, however you want to put it. Yeah, the question of safety is there. And that's where I think maybe they should have made that exception. As he said, it's a special event. It's for the fans. Safety is always a concern. Yeah, bring him in and double check it. If it's fully secure or whatever, give him his spot back. They could have done it differently. And like I said, I think they made the right call based on what they saw and what they could tell. So I think they made the right call as far as that. The safety thing does kind of concern me, and this is a discussion that I was just having with Mike as it pertains to so many things. You're not going to please everybody. You're not going to make everybody happy. They got to make a call. And if there's something they did wrong when it comes to throwing the yellow, they'll learn from it and evaluate it. So I think that under the circumstances, I think they made the right call.
Okay. Andy, you're up next.
Yeah, you're always going to see controversy around situations like this. I haven't even seen the race yet, so I'm not 100% sure what happened, but it sounds like Blaney's window net came down and then he was able to resecure it. Is that correct? And what happened?
Yeah, he thought the race was over. And under normal conditions, that race would have been over. But because this is a special event, they have different rules. And so when he realized that he had not yet won the race and he had to, they were going to do another restart, an overtime restart, he was in the position now of trying to get that window net back up. He saw his team celebrating, so, he really thought he had won the race already. But it wasn't over, and that's why he was in the position of trying to get that window net up himself. So, yeah, that's basically it. Denny Hamlin, of course, was not happy about it. He felt it was special consideration that was not due, and that he should have been black flagged for not having his window net up. So he made some comments about that after the race.
Oh, I see, because basically the All-Star race has to finish under green, and I think there was a caution right before the checkered flag. I did see that part. So,
Correct. Okay,
now I understand. Now I understand what happened. Well, I mean, yeah, Hamlin's going to react that way because he wanted to win the race, right? And when things, mm-hmm. don't go the way you want them to, you're going to be upset about that. So, of course, he's going to say that Blaney should have been black flagged and this and that. But, I think NASCAR got it right from the standpoint of they felt confident that Blaney had the window net up. And let him finish the race. I think, from what I have seen, Blaney was the fastest car, deserved to win that race. And I think if anyone else had won that race, it would have been an even greater tragedy than what they did by letting him stay out there. So I think they got it right. I think you just have to, let him race. And I think, obviously, if there was a safety concern, they would have brought him in, but they didn't feel there was one. He was able to get the window net secured. They did the green-white checker, and they finished the race. So, like I said, I think it would have been an even bigger shame if he hadn't been able to finish the race and somebody else had won, because the 12 car was for sure the car that should have won the race last night from what I've been able to see from it. So, when things like this happen, there's always going to be differing opinions, and there's always going to be, you know, some controversies around it. I think that's kind of what happens with these all-star races sometimes, because this isn't normal officiating. This isn't normal rules. Things are a little bit different, and sometimes when you have events like this, you have these weird scenarios happen. But I think ultimately they got it right. I think the race finished how it was supposed to finish. And, you know, thankfully the right guy won the race. And I think that's what we have to be thankful for, certainly, that Ryan didn't get the win taken from him. I am curious to know why the caution came out with only a few seconds left in the race. I guess you guys probably know better than I do, but
Scott Miller, just so you know, Scott Miller said that they felt like the caution was called prematurely.
Okay.
The guy, the race director, had his finger on the button. He saw something and pushed the button. In retrospect, they recognized that it was a premature call, and they take ownership of that. But they do sit down and review these things. But that's what it was.
Okay, and you know, and the good thing is, you know, reviewing something like that, they'll probably make improvements and get it right moving forward. But at the end of the day, it's good that Ryan didn't get cheated out of the win, and they can all move on from there.
Okay, Tommy, what are your thoughts about this?
So I agree with what Andy's saying. I'm glad Ryan won the race, because I mean, there's just a whole lot to hit on this whole topic with in regards to this whole All-Star race. But I cut it on right when Kyle Larson had a flat tire, and then Ross Chastain flew over Kyle Busch, literally. Kyle Busch had the best car up until that point, until he wrecked, from what I saw. And even Kyle Larson said this was Kyle Busch's race to lose. That's how good his car was. And then after Kyle Busch wrecked, Ryan Blaney had the next best car. So I agree with Ryan Blaney winning. In regards to the caution, from what I've read on Twitter and saw, because after the, like, third or fourth stage, I just cut it off. I didn't realize that the final stage was going to be 50 laps, and you know, just couldn't finish it. But anyway, I didn't get to see the caution, but from what I saw on Twitter, it was a mythical caution. I think Ricky Stenhouse had like a flat tire or something, and they threw the caution literally as Ryan Blaney was like crossing the line to win it. So he dropped his window net, which, you know, if you've seen, like, the YouTube stuff on NASCAR and everything, because I don't remember it, but I've seen it. Martin dropped his window net with one lap to go at Bristol, and obviously he didn't win the race. So Denny Hamlin's talking about black flagging for safety concerns, but either way, it would have taken the win away from Blaney, and then he would have gotten it. And if you did watch the race, like I said, Kyle Busch and Blaney had the dominating cars. It was going to be one of them that was going to win it, so... Glad that Ryan Blaney won it. Let's chunk Texas as the All-Star race, and let's get rid of that format. It's time for a change again.
Okay, that's another hot topic that we'll get to. But as far as my thoughts, I kind of feel like you got to take those comments for what they are. These are guys that, if they can eliminate the guy who won the race, it puts especially Denny Hamlin right into position to win that $1 million. So I suppose he's going to say something. The problem with Denny Hamlin right now is he's got something to say after just about every race. And it starts to get old, I think. We've talked about it all the time. First time's an accident, second time's coincidence, and by the time you do it the third time, it's becoming a habit. And in this case, I'm not sure where Denny Hamlin's coming from, that he feels he's got to put something out there for NASCAR to have controversy after every race. But he's doing that. So I think he's entered that habit area, and I don't know that it's a very good habit. I think it's probably not. some things are worth noting. I get that. And I know that there's a lot of comments, and we'll get to that too, about this All-Star race. But that had more to do, I think, with him coming in as the runner-up and losing that door of opportunity for him to win that $1 million. As far as Scott Miller in the comments, I think it's very hard for NASCAR in some of these situations. And Scott Miller brought it up. They have special rules that apply to the All-Star race that are a little bit different than the rules that are put in place for the point-paying races. So that's something that a lot of people, I think, are overlooking. And he's, again, Scott Miller said it, Ryan Blaney thought that race was over, and any other race, it would have been over with that yellow flag. So when he realized that he made that mistake and was in the position of trying to get that up, again, NASCAR did everything they could. They saw him struggling to get the window net up. They saw that he was trying to make it right again. And they did not start the race. They did not restart the race until they saw him warming up his tires with both hands on the wheel. So that was an indication to them. When he had both hands on the wheel, it was an indication to NASCAR that he had that window net up and that they could go back to racing again. So they didn't have any way of knowing whether or not it was 100% secure, and they acknowledged that. But the fact that he had both hands on the wheel was an indication that he had done everything he could do in the car, and they were ready to get that race started again. The one thing that I do like that NASCAR does is the fact that they sit down, and he said it's every Tuesday, they sit down and they go back over things that have happened. Because they, as he pointed out, they can't anticipate every little thing that can happen. So the only way they can review those things is after they happen. And so after they happen, they sit down and review it and talk about what can they do differently to make it better for the next time. And they're just never in a position that they can actually anticipate all of the different things that can happen. So I think they do the best they can. They're never going to satisfy everybody 100%. Everybody's always going to have something to say. But I think they did the best they could in this particular situation to get the race going again. They acknowledged the mistake in calling the yellow prematurely, and they'll look at that and see how they can avoid that from happening again. So I say kudos to NASCAR. I think they did everything they could in this situation with minimal effect to the race results. So, and I know there's different ways of looking at that depending on if you're Denny Hamlin or Ryan Blaney. But, Jay, your follow-up thoughts.
Well, and I was going to read Mike's here on under this topic. It says it's not sure exactly what changes Hamlin wants to see. Hopefully it's more structured than just a general, they need to do better. The article, Mike gets his jab in here, the article highlights problems with the broadcast product. So that's definitely one area for that seems to be a growing consensus on, as that's been one of Mike's soapboxes, if you will. We won't go into that, but that's where the discussion between Mike and I goes to. There's a difference between saying, hey, what can we do better versus, hey, you're doing this wrong. You're doing this wrong. Provide a solution. Provide some help, not just the finger pointing of what's wrong. And Mike would know this term. Andy, I don't know if you're familiar with it. We called in the military a hot wash. Like Scott Miller was saying, on Tuesdays, you go back, you review. Talk about what went right, what went wrong, what can we do better, what do we need to change. And I think NASCAR does do a good job of that. I know Tommy already brought it up. We got a couple other, like I said, there's a lot within just Scott Miller's interview where the All-Star should be raised, how the format. Okay, they're going to review all that. So, yeah, that and having fan input isn't my issue. It is the way that input is and whether or not it is truly from fans or just people that are on Twitter that want to stir the pot and complain. I want to make sure I use the right words here. I used a couple earlier with Mike. I don't like, but I'd used them. Just the whining and the crying versus, hey, let's look at this. Can we do this better? What about this idea? There's a difference in that. There really is. So, and I think that NASCAR, you know, has to filter through all that and look at, okay, you know, and Mike keeps saying, you know, don't just dismiss it. I'm not saying dismiss it. I'm saying dismiss them, not what they're saying necessarily or to look at what they're saying. It's just a matter of dismissing them. So that's my biggest thing is, as Sharon, as you mentioned it, it's gotten to the point where Denny Hamlin has something to say in that manner after every race. You know, think about the old story of the boy who cried wolf. You know, I mean, you do it so many times. Yeah, people are going to quit listening to you because it's Denny Hamlin just crying again. So that's where I think it needs to be. I know he's part of is he part of that council? I want to say he is. You know, that's the format where you bring it in a positive way and get all kinds of input and build the best scenario. And Scott put it, definitely hit on it. I think to the safer barriers, they put them everywhere they thought a car could get to and hit a wall. Somebody always found a spot to hit a wall where there wasn't one, and they're like, how did that happen, you know? So, you know, they try their best to come with every possible scenario. And the last thing with the hitting the button, the caution, that's, again, split-second decisions. I haven't seen the video. My mom said that there was a car up in the wall or Ricky Stenhouse had a tire, whether there was smoke or something that they felt, you know, again, in that split second that they thought it was going to need to be responded to and was going to be the caution. As it turned out, maybe it didn't. They've already acknowledged that. But again, I can't say I blame them because that's a split second decision and you want to be safe. And there again, you want to give fans the green, white checkered under green. They do that. Then the fans complain. You don't do it. They complain. So, I think it was Marcus Smith I added to this, one of the discussions. You can't please everybody. And Sharon, it's coming up on time.
Oh, my goodness. One topic, and we're already on time. Okay, it was probably the hottest topic, though. One of the hottest. We are at that time of the show where, for those people that are tuning in for the first time, we want to just let you know that we are going to go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. But we are going to continue our conversation, and we will record that conversation as part of our bonus overtime material that is available on our podcast. If you've listened up to this point, all you have to do is once I come out on Twitter to let you know that we've completed our conversation and the podcast is now available, is you fast forward to the 2-hour mark, and that will allow you to hear the rest of the conversation. We just didn't want you to be caught off guard and not know how you can hear the rest of the conversation. We wanted to give you a clear understanding of what's kind of going on, especially if this is the first time that you're tuning in. So with that, Andy, were you done, Jay?
Yeah, I was done. I was definitely done there. You know, again, we could carry on another half hour, an hour on that topic alone, but I think we can move to another one.
Okay. Andy, your follow-up thoughts?
Nothing to really add to this one. Pretty much said what needs to be said. You know, I think that ultimately they can go back and look at ways to improve processes and decisions, and hopefully that makes for a better product moving forward.
Exactly. Tommy, did you have any follow-up?
No, not really. Just glad that Ryan Blaney won.
Yeah, I just wanted to, in defense of the guy that hit the caution button a little too quickly, you guys will recall earlier this year, NASCAR was blamed for not calling a caution when, I forget who it was, Corey LaJoy or somebody, was on the backstretch and had an issue, and there was no caution called, and everybody wanted to know, where was NASCAR, why didn't they call it? So in defense of this guy, he probably did not want to be, you know, he called that shot as quickly as he could. So sometimes NASCAR is wrong no matter what they do. So I do think that fans need to remember they're the ones who ask NASCAR to be more diligent about that. In this case, they were very diligent, maybe overly diligent, but they called it when they thought there might be an issue there. So I have to say, at least there was some backstory to that, I think, that may have precipitated that guy from hitting the button as quickly as he did. And we'll go on with the other topics because I know we have more. Jay, what else do you want to add to this conversation for us to discuss?
Okay, so moving to a new topic or still on the just Denny Hamlin?
Well, it doesn't have to be still on Denny Hamlin. You said there's a lot within the Scott Miller segment.
Okay, let's see. The other one that was tying into to that one to me was talking about the rules, especially the green-white checkers rule. So my question on there was, is there too many special rules or changes the All-Star race that confuses everybody going from teams, drivers, broadcasters, officials, and especially the fans? When we look at the format of the All-Star, I know it changes every year, and I think this is where I put the one from Marcus Smith underneath as well, that they, you know, when they look at it, let me see if I can scroll up here. I think it was. You know, nobody wants to see things stay the same. It gets stale, but then they don't like change, is how Marcus Smith put it. So, but the question is, and I heard it on Race Hub with Jamie McMurray as one. I know that input is there too much confusion and change when it comes to the All-Star format that nobody really even knows what's going on.
Okay, Andy, your thoughts about that?
I'm sorry, can you rephrase the question real quick? I was having to do something real quick. Sorry, what was the question?
Is there too many rules and changes when it comes to the special event like the All-Star race that teams don't know? Just for example, of the green-white checkered, Blaney thought he had won because that's how races are normally won. Broadcasters said they weren't even sure during a couple of spots, I guess, what was happening. And I know Jamie McMurray during the Race Hub preview of it made the comment even back when he won his All-Star race and I don't remember what year it was, you know, the format of what he said, you just go out there, you race to the front, and from there they'll tell you where you're going to line up and, you know, what points you get or however the format is that year. But is it too confusing and too much, I guess, is the question.
Gotcha. Yeah, my apologies. No, that's a valid question, and it's a valid point too, because if you look at the history of the All-Star race, there's constant changes, and there's changes from year to year, so nothing has ever stayed the same. I don't think in the last 21 years that I've been watching the sport that we've seen an All-Star race be the same format under the same rules from year to year. I think they've constantly changed it, and it's constantly evolved, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, because the All-Star race is a non-points exhibition race that is supposed to be a special event. With any special event comes special rules, special circumstances and whatnot. But I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to maybe simplify the rules and the process of these races and maybe make it somewhat more well-known. I'm not sure how they facilitate giving these rules or instructions to the teams, but certainly when industry people are confused at the format of an event, that's probably an issue, whether it be a team or, you know, a race broadcast craster, whoever the case may be. So is there a way they can make that better? Probably, because we see, you know, constant changes with these races. And I do think that, you know, maybe if they could streamline and simplify the process for making these rules and make it more easier to understand and make it more readily available to teams ahead of time to try to understand what the rules are, then maybe that would be a good scenario. I do think that it's you know, as it aligns with this topic, I do think that the All-Star race rules change too much. They change every single year. I don't think it's a bad idea to tweak stuff occasionally, but, you know, maybe, you know, try to find a simple format that works and stick with it for a while, you know, and go from there. So certainly, yes, there's a way that they can try to make this easier for the teams and everyone to better understand what the rules are, what the format's going to be, and ultimately how the race is set to be run.
Okay, Tommy, your thoughts?
Yes, I think it definitely does need to be simplified. I just don't think Texas works as the All-Star race. That's my personal opinion. Maybe if they did, you know, review, like they said, and tweak some things, that it could improve. And, you know, I'm certainly fine for that option happening. But honest thoughts are this. I'm fine with the Busch Clash being at the L.A. Coliseum, or if they bring the Bud Shootout back to Daytona, I'm fine with that, because then you have the full week of the Bud Shootout starting it and then ending on Sunday. You know, the whole speed week is back instead of not having it, or a shorter speed week, I should say. Anyway, my point about that is the All-Star race used to be that in Charlotte. You would do the All-Star race one Sunday, and then the next Sunday would be the Coca-Cola 600. You'd have a whole week at Charlotte. To me, that makes sense to go back to that. And logistically, it would make more sense, too, to bring it back to Charlotte. You know, maybe they could do the road course instead of doing the do the All-Star Open and All-Star race on the road course instead of the oval. But there's so many possibilities too with this. I just don't see where Texas is working. I mean, social media is huge in today's world, and people were not happy on Twitter yesterday. And I myself, I'm going to be honest, I took the weekend off. Texas is that disappointing to me. That's just my personal opinion. I can't think of the last time Texas put on a good race or a good. The highlight of the race last night, in my opinion, wasn't a highlight. It was Ross Chastain jumping Kyle Busch in his car, literally jumping his car, and it was a crash. That was probably the most exciting thing that happened during the All-Star race, and that's bad when it's a crash. And, I mean, Kyle Larson said it right when he got out of his car. It was Kyle Busch and Blaney's race to lose. And the reason why is because they were the leaders the whole race. Nobody could pass them. There was no passing. It just, I don't know, maybe, I mean, even before the last two or three races at Texas, they keep on applying surface stuff to it to make the racing more exciting or whatever. I mean, somebody said this on Twitter, and this is how I'll wrap it up. They're bringing North Wilkesboro back. Wouldn't it be crazy if Texas, they replaced North Wilkesboro, ends up North Wilkesboro replacing Texas in the future? I'm for it. I think it could happen. Now that they have COTA in Texas, let's just chunk Texas Speedway and let COTA be the race there.
Okay. We're talking about the rules. Difference between the two regular races, regular points-paying races versus the All-Star race, and now we're talking about the location. So I guess we'll kind of lump those two things together here as we go around for the second time. But as far as the rules changes, let's just say that, yeah, there are a lot of changes. It does change every single year. And if the drivers are confused about when the race is ending, the broadcasters were confused about when the race ended. They weren't even sure if the race was over yet. I think that indicates that there's a problem. I know that they do driver meetings, and I would think that some of these differences in the race rules for the All-Star race versus a regular points-paying race would be highlighted and reiterated for all of the drivers and crew chiefs and spotters during that driver's meeting. So it makes you kind of wonder, what were these guys talking about during that driver's meeting so that these drivers would know exactly what are the differences between a normal points being race versus the changes that happened during the All-Star race. Yeah, I think that I know that sometimes when you put things in a visual, it makes it easier for people to kind of absorb what those changes are. I think NASCAR even tried to do that this year. But one thing I will tell you, I know that they'll look at it and they'll see what they can maybe do differently to make it easier for people to understand the differences in the rules during the All-Star race a little more clearly. But what that is, I'm not sure that I know what it is. My suggestion would be to make it more visual, to cover it during the driver's meetings, and every chance you get as a broadcaster to be talking about it as well, so that it's really clear for the race fans. It's obvious that the broadcasters were confused, so they've got to do their due diligence as well in knowing what those differences are and making those differences very clear to the fans. And I think the broadcasters are part of the reasons why that kind of fell apart as well. But I also have to put some of the blame there with the drivers' meetings, because that should have been made very clear to the drivers during the drivers' meetings prior to the All-Star race. So the fact that everybody was confused, I think there was a breakdown in communication. And as far as the location, I know one of the things that Mike brought up is having a fan vote. Or maybe it was Dale Jr. that brought it up. Let's see here if I can pull this up. The venue might or should be a fan vote. Is one of the things that Dale Jr. suggested. Personally, I think logistically, I think that would be difficult, because I think a lot of these tracks, and NASCAR for that matter, have to put their schedules like together a year in advance. And so you'd have to vote this year for where you want it to be next year, and then hope and pray that logistically they can kind of put that together. And that might mean having to rearrange some existing plans. So could it be at some different places? I think, yeah, they probably could. But I think the reason we're seeing it 2 years at Texas Motor Speedway is that's kind of the commitment that they have to give a track so that they can make their plans for the year. You know, by, you know, maybe now they're planning 3 years out for where they might have it for the next go around. It's hard to do this on a year-by-year basis, to do it in a different location every year. I think that's going to be a very difficult thing for NASCAR to put together. But, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, a lot of them the same. First off, applaud Tommy. He's persistent. He wanted to express his opinion. He doesn't think it should be at Texas. That was in every topic we talked
exactly.
about. Yeah, and that obviously was going to come up. You hit on some key points there, Sharon. Talking about location, it's a logistics thing, the track commitment. You know, so we had the 1 year at Bristol for the COVID. And then now at Texas, this is another one I go back to, though. I'm going to repeat myself. You can't make everybody happy. It was at Charlotte. fans didn't want to see it at Charlotte every year, year in and year out, take it on the road, which is what it was originally designed to do. It went Charlotte, Atlanta, back to Charlotte for, I don't remember, X number of years. So that was what the fans wanted. Now it's, you know, they're moving it around a little bit. Well, they don't like that. You know, and Tommy, I understand that the being in Charlotte, and I was okay with it at Charlotte every year. I would like to see it go to some other ones, but I understand, yes, Dale Jr. saying that the fan vote. I think that's an excellent idea. Do the vote and then take it to NASCAR and say, hey, can we do this? Is this a possible venue? Can we make it happen, say, in the next year or so? Because, Sharon, like you said, you're going to give a track a commitment, and whether it be 2 or 3 years, say, hey, you got it for the next couple of years. It's yours. Fans start voting now. Where are we going to go after this contract is up? So there's a way it can be tied in, but you can't just say 1 year to the next, oh, on the spot, we're going to go here, because it takes planning and everything else. So fans need to look at that and understand that. But I think it could be incorporated, and I kind of like that idea. But like you said, if the contract is for, and I don't know if it's a 2 or a 3 year, you said 2, whatever it be. And I think 2 years, I mean, that's fair. Hey, you got it for 2 years. Once that track, you know, Texas, we're a year out, let fans start voting now, okay, for the next 2 years it's going to be at this track that the fans voted on. Start opening up that poll of where is the next one so NASCAR can start planning that, the track can start planning it. As far as the overall format, you know, I understand there was some confusion, but like Jamie said, I show up, I race to the front. They tell me, you know, what I need to do. It'll work itself out. It has every year. Yes, there were some things that were missed, whether it be by drivers, you know, in this case of not knowing that the race wasn't going to be over with the yellow. And in this case, I think this is a little bit different in not realizing that it wasn't going to be a green-white checkered. He really thought he had gotten the checkered because of how far he had gone past. You know, he hadn't seen the yellow yet. And, again, I haven't seen the video, but they said he was only like 100 feet, 100 yards when the yellow came out. So that one maybe not, wasn't that he didn't understand it. He just didn't realize it had happened, you know, because it was so quick. Again, these are split-second things. Some of the other things that maybe get missed, I personally feel like you said, Sharon, maybe they're not giving their 100% attention during the driver's meeting, or if they get the list of format and rules, they're kind of scanning over it and going, yeah, okay, that's Nora, yeah, I'm used to that, and not hitting on these key elements, you know, you can't do this. Now, Frankie Stoddard wouldn't have let that happen. He'd have known exactly. He knew what the rule was, and he exploited it. I'll bring that up again. So there was a crew chief that made sure he knew every little rule and how to take advantage of it. So it can be done. I understand it gets to be a little bit much changes every year, but I think that is part of it. It makes it different. This year, the pit crew portion of the qualifying, did I understand it when it started? I had an idea, but no, seeing it in action, okay. The one thing I look at when we talk about that, some of the things that, and Mike and I know we're chatting about this, that they've done in the All-Star and then became a part of regular racing. Going back to the double file restarts, the no lap down cars on the inside row like we used to have, the choose cone, that was implemented, tested in the All-Star race. We have it every week now. So there's a reason for some of these things that they implement. I think it was on Dave Moody's SiriusXM Speedway that technically stage racing kind of developed from that in the truck series when they did the caution flag, because the All-Star race has been broken into stages. So that kind of got moved into as a part of what we have as far as stage racing now. So there are some benefits to it of trying new things each year, seeing what works and what doesn't. And again, it's, you know, the years they had the fan vote for inversion. How many cars are you going to invert so that drivers can't sandbag or try and work it out? It's a fan vote on the spot. You know, again, one time, did it work or not? I thought it was a cool for that year. They didn't do it again? Okay, they tried something else. So I think they need to find a balance. There's some things that they could, you know, try and keep consistent. versus changing every year, there's also something to be said for trying new things.
Okay. Andy, your follow-up.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to kind of echo some of what Tommy said there in terms of the Texas All-Star Race experiment. I think it's time to move on from it. I would have to say that, you know, those two All-Star races at Texas really were, quite frankly, lackluster. I haven't actually seen the race broadcast from yesterday, but I've seen enough to know that it wasn't really that exciting. And the All-Star race is supposed to be an exciting event. It's supposed to be showcasing the talents of NASCAR's top drivers. And I know it's a fun race, but it's supposed to be exciting to watch. And it's just, we've gotten away from that. And I hope that, you know, those who make the decisions moving forward will realize that moving it somewhere else is really probably the way to go. And I hope that that's the direction we go in. What the next track or answer is, it's really hard to say, but these mile-and-a-half tracks really probably aren't the answer, except for maybe like Homestead or a place like that, I think would put on a pretty good show. But it might be time to, like what they did with the Clash in moving it from Daytona, which was traditional, to the Coliseum, was a big, drastic, bold new change that I think worked well. I think the Busch Clash was a success this year, and it was an entertaining race from start to finish. And I think the All-Star race could be the same thing, but it's going to require a change, and Texas Motor Speedway is not the answer.
Okay. Tommy, in your defense, as long as it's taken us to talk about two subjects, I can understand why you wanted to also bring up that topic of location. So what are your follow-up thoughts?
Yeah, sorry for going off topic earlier about it. I did mean to hit on the format, too, because the format, even in my opinion, needs to be adjusted a little bit. It's too confusing. I mean, Denny Hamlin's kind of right. It seems like they're making up rules as they go. I mean, really, it seems like that. They even had the issues at Bristol. But back to the location and the format and all of that stuff, when I was watching it last night, this was the confusing part to me. I think stages 1, 2, and 3 were like 25 or 30 laps. I mean, you could correct me if I'm wrong. Texas is just not a good race, so I really wasn't paying that much attention. They were just kind of turning laps. And the next thing I know, I'm like, all right, final stage. It was like 10:30 at that time. And it was like 50 laps. And I was like, what? Why wouldn't it be shorter? Like, you've been doing 25, 30 laps every stage. Why make the last one 50 laps? So I think I had to go to bed, and I just didn't finish it. And then I woke up this morning and saw all the stir about everything that was going on. It was just like, man, definitely need to, I mean, Marcus Smith, I saw on Twitter today where he said everybody that was at the track had a good time. Okay, I can see that. I went to Talladega in October, the one that Bubba won, and I had a great time there. I mean, I spent Sunday and Monday there, and I got to meet Andy and Mike. With that being said, the race, it faced criticism, and it shouldn't, because I feel like NASCAR made some judgments back then with the rain that didn't need to be made, but they did. You guys are right. It's hard to please everybody. You can't. Everybody's going to complain. Some are going to have positive complaints. Some are going to have negative complaints. But overall, what I would say is this. The past 2 years at Texas, nobody has liked it from what I've seen, because I feel like we've talked more bad about it than we have good. Why not just chunk it? Let's just admit that it was a failed experiment. I mean, NASCAR has pulled off some good experiments, like the L.A. Coliseum, the Daytona Road Course, coming back during COVID, being the first sport to do that. But the Texas All-Star Race doesn't fit that category. It just doesn't work, in my opinion, and they need to move on from it. Texas is not the track to do that. It's, in my opinion, bad enough just to have one race there a year. Why would you put the All-Star Race there? I'd like to see it back at Charlotte just because you get that full week there with the All-Star race being that Sunday, and then the next Sunday being the Coca-Cola 600. But I thought Bristol put on a good show when they put the lights up under the cars. I think a short track would be the way to go if you want an entertaining all-star race.
Yeah, I think those are good suggestions, Tommy. You know, although I think the fan vote would be kind of tough to do, Jay gave some good examples of how they might be able to make that work. But, yeah, I do think that if they do change it, it has to be at least 2 or 3 years commitment that they're going to give that track to make it work. And this is the second year for Texas Motor Speedway. So if it's not working there, then they have to look at some other alternatives. I would say since Charlotte Motor Speedway is a 1.5-mile track and people were calling for it to not be there, Texas Motor Speedway is a 1.5-mile track, people are calling for it not to be there, I would say they need to think about doing either the road course or a short track, something different than what they're doing with the 1.5-mile tracks. Homestead Miami is a 1.5-mile track. It's a little bit racier than the other tracks that we talked about there. But I do think that they need to look at doing something different and getting fans there and getting fans on board with the changes. Whatever those changes are, they've got to find a way to make that very clear to the fans, to the broadcasters, to everybody involved, for that matter, when they do make some of these changes, because it does get to be too confusing. So I'm echoing a lot of the same things that you guys have said, so I don't really have a lot to add there. I just want to make it clear. It's not that I'm against changing the venue. I'm just against maybe having a fan vote every year to go to a different track every year. I think that's a tall task to get NASCAR to be able to do it that frequently. I think we have to anticipate at least a 2 or 3 year commitment from each of the tracks. So, Jay, you get to wrap this up.
Yeah, like I said, find that balance of what can we do that is possible, as well as keeps the fans happy, at least for that 30 seconds or however long they'll stay happy with the decision that's made. But that's my own soapbox, and I'm not trying to say it needs to stay at Texas or that they've been the best races. I would never try and say that. You know, Tommy mentioned the Bristol Dirt one. Mike didn't think that was a good one either. So you're going to have that. I understand that, and that's where I say I think a 2 or 3 year at particular venue, and as long as we're going to throw it out there and campaign, I'm going to campaign for either Iowa Speedway or, if it's still there, Chicagoland Speedway, since it doesn't get used for anything else right now. So, you know, like I said, I'm in favor of that, but I understand you got to give them time to work the details out. And like you said, you may get it here. It's going to be for a couple of years. Then we're going to try something else. So finding that balance. The format, I think there are some things, if nothing else, in the brief of stressing, hey, this is the changes for this year. Hey, this is different than your weekly racing, whatever that rule is or change, of really highlighting that so that things don't maybe get overlooked. But like you said, Sharon, I think maybe the teams maybe need to do a little bit more, get more guys like, I'm going to give him another shout out, Frankie Stoddard. You know, he knew what the rule was and he knew how to work around it. So it can be done. You know, like I said, I think there's a little bit on both sides. Maybe NASCAR overdid it with the amount of changes and whatnot, but I think the teams could put a little more effort into knowing what's going on too, so that they don't get caught with their pants down.
Exactly right. Okay, now then, we're already at the top of the hour, so let's go ahead and start our roundtable. Andy, we'll start with you for that.
All right, yeah, for me, I'm on Twitter at CB14Fan, and nice to be on tonight. It's been a little bit, so thankful that worked out, and looking forward to trying to get back into watching more of these races. I've been a little absent the last couple, 3 weeks because I've been pretty busy, but got some good races coming up in the next few months, so looking forward to hopefully being more active on Race Day Chats as well as the radio show. But nice to be on.
Okay. Now it's nice to have you here, too. So, Tommy?
At Since95Fan on Twitter, give me a follow. I've been posting some pics of my diecast every day with the day's date. So check it out, and thanks for having me back on. It was a lot of fun.
We always enjoy having you, Tommy. Jay?
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And there were a couple of things I wanted to say here to wrap up. Oh, first off, we're talking about the All-Star format. It was all confusing, so let's make sure we're clear. Tommy doesn't want the All-Star race at Texas anymore. I don't want there to be any confusion about that. You follow him on Twitter, he might even say so on there. I'm sorry. I just give you a hard time, Tommy, man. And like I said, I can understand that opinion. I know – oh, that was the other thing. Make sure you tune in Thursday for Hot Topics because, Sharon, what do we got, 3, 4 we didn't even get to tonight that I know are some other big ones.
Yep.
One that certainly should have pleased you as far as Joe Gibbs Racing this thing. So we'll get to those on Thursday night's Hot Topic because I'll put
– there might even be an announcement before then that will clear it all up. Who knows? I certainly don't. I'm just speculating there. But I am Fan for Racing Sites on Twitter. We are Fan for Racing Blog and Radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com, where we have our radio player, a Fan for Racing radio player, and you can listen to our podcast until Thursday when we bring – well, you can listen to it at any time. But Thursday we'll have a new broadcast as we preview the upcoming races at Charlotte Motor Speedway. We have all three series racing again this weekend, and there's a Whelen Modified race in Jennerstown, and the Arca Menards Series racing at Charlotte Motor Speedway this weekend. So a lot of racing coming up this weekend that we'll be previewing on Thursday. We do have, earlier in the show, we have the pre-race audio from Stuart Friesen after winning the Truck Series race, if you want to listen to that. We also had Dylan Zampa, who won again in the SRL Southwest Touring Series Pro Late Model Division. And we Sal Segala did a nice interview with Dylan tonight as well, so you'll want to tune in for that if you haven't already heard it. And with that, a big shout-out to our listeners for tuning in and to our Fan for Racing crew, Jake Huseman, Andy Lasky, and Tommy Kraft, for always making the Hot Topic Sound-Off segment one of the funnest segments of the show. So thank you for all you do, and to Sal Segala for doing everything he does during that 90-minute review show on Monday nights as well. Again, one more reminder, we are getting together Tuesday next week for a Monday night show. We're going to do it on Tuesday because Monday is the Memorial Day holiday. So look for us on Tuesday, May the 31st at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. So with that, guys, I think we're ready to call it a night.
Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. We'll talk to you again on Thursday. Whoops.